Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission.
We're going to welcome two really good friends and coworkers. Kelly and Janice are with us today. Welcome, guys.
Yes, welcome, Kelly and Janice. Super excited to have you guys with us. Since we are still kind of new in Europe, getting to know coworkers, you guys are ones that we felt a really quick like-mindedness with. Well, Jesse and Kelly knew each other well, but
yeah. We
are so glad to be serving alongside you guys and excited for our listeners to get to know you and hear your story.
Yeah, that's right. And of the many things that you guys could share and I think bless our listeners with, one that we're going to narrow in on today is your involvement in sending Europeans out. So the initiative to actually work alongside of churches that are here in Europe and then encourage, equip, and even facilitate the sending of missionaries from European churches, whether that's to other parts of Europe or even outside of Europe as well. That is an exciting development, I think, in Great Commission work that we're seeing, and that it's almost like if we look historically, right, obviously there was a history of missionaries sending from Europe, but a long quiet time, I think, in between when that was really hot and heavy and these days. So to see you all kind of step into that again, for us to see the Lord working in that arena again is really exciting. Tell us a little bit about your background, ministry, what kind of brought you to this point.
Okay, my name's Kelly. We've already established that, but I was born in Illinois, grew up in New Mexico and Kentucky, and
I'm Janice, and I'm from Taipei, Taiwan.
And then we ended up meeting at Murray State University in Kentucky. That seemed like a God thing because, you know, a kid kind of who moved all around the United States and then somebody from Taiwan meeting in Kentucky. I don't think it happens that often.
But
right. We got married after a couple of years knowing each other. Toward the end of that time, we moved to Taiwan for a year. And then after that, we made it back to Memphis. During that time, I went to seminary. While I was going to seminary, we had the opportunity to come to a very small church. It had been like 250 people the year before we got there. Mm. And by the time we arrived, there were 12.
Ooh.
So,
wow. Whoa.
Yeah. So it had major church conflict. It died, died. So we had, you know, a budget, a building, and a bad reputation. So that's kind of where we started, replanted that. That was a lot of learning there. And I think that's really like where we first really got in touch with like, hey, what does it mean to make disciples? And we realized really fast that just by having good music and a full worship service, like that we weren't really getting where we wanted to go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that shaped and formed us. We were there for 7 years. We ended up making it to Germany. And so we've been in Frankfurt, Germany for 12 years. And over those 12 years, the first 3 years, we were partnering heavily with a good friend of ours. He's a German, planting a church. And then after 3 years, we were sent out kind of from that church with another friend to another city district of about 70,000 people where there wasn't an evangelical church anywhere, and just wanted to see a church spawn from that. And during that time, there was something that started called the Center for Church Planting, where we said, hey, what if our two churches, because there weren't many churches at that time at all, even established or church plants. I said, what if our two church plants could plant 10 churches over the next 10 years? Hmm. And that seemed like a wildly impossible goal. Maybe my faith is too small. And it was, because at about year seven in the city, we saw, you know, different kinds of models and all that stuff, but we saw those 10 churches planted. Man. And really,
praise
by God's
God,
grace.
That's awesome.
And so what came out of that was like an established church network from many of the ones that were tied to the Evangelical Alliance, plus so those new churches that came together for something called the Mainprojekt in German, which is just the name of the river, the main project. And they came together really around like one vision mission in the city to collaborate around that. So that's kind of like what we've been doing the last few years.
You also have two wonderful teenage daughters that we love, and they're just such healthy, loving, vibrant TCKs. And you guys have gone through a lot of health challenges. I just want to mention that because I think it reminds us, all of us listeners, that God can get us through very difficult things and keep using us. And so just with Kelly walking through cancer, Janice having a stroke, I got to serve with you guys a couple weeks ago at a conference that we're going to talk about, kind of a missions conference for Europeans. And just seeing you guys serve there and knowing all that you'd walk through really made me praise God and increased my faith.
Yeah. So it's been an example to many.
Yeah.
Well, your example of faith, God's provision. As we talk about sending internationals, I actually wasn't aware, and I see the seeds of this all the way back 20 years ago, is that you're passionate about this, Kelly, because you met your wife as an international student in a university in the States. But just thinking about seeing the seeds planted way back there, I see the real motivation. But as you guys have stepped into various phases of ministry, right, involved in church planting all along the way, the Lord brought you to Frankfurt, gave you some incredible local partners to work with as you guys were partnering together to plant churches. And now over the trajectory of your time in Frankfurt, there's been a bit of a pivot or a development in your focus on, hey, what does it look like for these churches even that we planted or churches that we're partnering with that are part of this network that are German churches? What does it look like to help them send the way that you all have been sent, the way that we have been sent? So talk a little bit about how you stepped into that process and how that developed over the course of the past few years.
Yeah, so I would say very much it developed out of that time of sickness. So, I think within the city there had already, you know, been that collaborative situation where we wanted to see more churches and disciples in the city, and so there were processes put in place, like, you know, we had kind of three processes that people could walk through. The first one was, what does it mean to be a missional disciple for Jesus where I live? The second one was, how do I lead others to live as a missional disciple? And the third one was, how do I lead a group of people to go to a place where there's no church to plant a missional church? So that was really thinking in our, you know, in our immediate region. But I think the natural outworking of that, I mean, we see it in the Bible in Acts 1:8-2, like the natural outworking is like, if you have that vision, then it automatically is going to start spreading further than that. Yeah. Because if you, you know, I think it was laser focused on that, and not just me, like this is really a story of like, of partnership and a lot of amazing partners. But I think during the time of sickness, one thing that happened was that I was completely sidelined. I had like late stage 3 cancer, basically. And so that meant that there were weeks or maybe even months where I needed help to just get off the bed and make it to the bathroom, which is like, you know, 5 meters away or something. And so during that time, I was just completely sidelined. And I thought, wow, I never thought that exit would look like this. And it was really a forced exit. It was a blessing too in some ways, because we got to see all of these friends and partners from over the years just like step into everything that we were doing. And they were already doing a lot of the things, so they were, you know, taking on extra. But if I have to describe my life before getting sick, it was that I was a plate juggler, and I had like 16 or 17 plates. And I was a pretty good juggler. Like I wasn't bad at it. I was like, I'm good at this, you know? And then every now and then a plate would fall and shatter, and it was like, okay. And I forgave myself or whatever, and then asked God for his forgiveness. And then I kind of stuck another plate on there. Yeah, I mean, I realized like extra wasn't as good as I thought it was, but inwardly I felt like I can do this. And then, but that brought me to the place to see I had overextended myself in many, many ways. And like, I wasn't really meant to hold 17 plates. And what happened was, instead of all the plates coming crashing down, which is what I expected, I had these wonderful partners come aside and grab the pole and start spinning the plate. And what I found out was they did it way better than I did it. In most cases. And none of the plates crashed, which I expected. So I was like, wow, that's a miracle, honestly. Not a miracle that they could do it, a miracle that those things continued, even though I didn't really have a good plan. Like, I wish I had had a good plan you know, yeah. take credit for some of that. I can't. So, so, okay. So coming out of that, I was thinking, okay, if I get healthy, which was always a question because it was unclear for a long time. It's like, if I make it out of this, do I go back to what I was doing before? Like, do I even have the energy to do half of that? And the first thing was like, well, I don't want to go back to what I'm doing before because they're like, other people are doing it and they're doing it better than I did. And Janice was taken out sidelined really because she was really caring for me 100% as well. That was a blessing in disguise. And then coming back, we just talked to some mentors of ours, some older people in our organization, and just said like, hey, maybe this is it. Maybe it's like mission accomplished. You move somewhere else, go become a nurse or something. I don't know. Like, had no idea. And in the end, one of the guys we talked to, he said, hey, have you, you know, if you look at like the different components of the missionary task, or if you look at like the different components, like what's the one where you would say, oh, we're weak there? He's like, because they're probably something that you're really weak in. And we both knew it immediately. It was that same thing that had become a blessing, which was the exit part. It was like, yeah, we're not really good. Because I think exit has a lot to do with multiplication as well.
Yeah.
When we first came to Frankfurt, what did people say about church planning?
It's not welcomed. And they say it openly.
Yeah, they're like, church planning is stupid. Like, we were told that. And we're like, thank you. My name's Kelly. We went from that place to now the citywide collaborative where it feels like everyone is somehow supportive of church planting and disciple making. But whenever we would talk about like going to another city to do that, or even just like in a short-term way going to do that, initially there was a lot of pushback of like, hey, so you want to send our best people somewhere else? Or you want to send all of our best people somewhere else is what I've heard a couple times. And I said, no, I want to send some of our best people somewhere else. I'd like to send all of our people somewhere else and have them come back and be better disciples here where they're living. So like that was kind of where that came out of. That was a long explanation for that's how we got to where we are right now.
Yeah, good. That's good.
I mean, if I can add one little thing.
Yeah.
I mean, during the sickness process, we actually also put on a piece of paper and seriously to think about what are our strengths and what are our weakness. And that actually kind of helped us to start this journey as well.
Okay.
Because I think sometimes knowing our strengths and knowing our weakness can help us to move forward in a healthy way as well.
Yeah, like we can't do everything. Where are we uniquely positioned by God at this moment to hit the spot?
What year did you have cancer, Kelly?
Well, apparently I had it for quite a while, but that's what I was told by my doctor. But when I found out, it was 2020, beginning of
2023.
2023. Okay. Yeah, so it's not that long ago.
No, it's not. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and then pretty much 2024, I was healed, and then I through 2024, you know, I think it was like 2025, I started really feeling a lot better.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking that you could have decided to go home at that point very, very easily, you know, with no guilt. I mean, everybody would have been like, of course, you're going home, and look at what God has done since then. I'm so glad that you guys decided to stay on the field.
Yeah.
So tell us more about what this has been like, sending Europeans, and just from going to that conference, our listeners need to have a clear picture of what we mean when we say sending Europeans, because that conference was the most diverse group of young people. It was so exciting. So many different languages. Tell us a bit about
the audience, the pool.
And the vision to intentionally mobilize immigrants, many of whom were actually born in Europe, but now are, so they're European, but they have a different background, and the opportunities there.
The very beginning is like seeing all the people around us and seeing, hearing the narratives. Sometimes that group, we call them secret weapons. They don't actually see themselves that way. I mean, start with my own kids. When we are in America or Europe, they will think that people, other people think they are Asians. And when we go back to Asia, people call them foreigners. But at the same time, I've seen them going to different places, how they find a way to fit in and to...
to find friends, to build relationships, and anywhere.
Yeah. And then coming to see the second church that we have planted, and all the people have similar situations. And then at the same time, we are giving to the gift, actually, and seeing what are they doing with the gifts they are given. And then that got the conversation started.
Yeah. So I think, like, I would say it has to do with two main groups. And the first one is next generation. And the second one would be second generation or people with a multicultural background. It could be first generation, came here as a young person or something like that to Europe. But those are kind of the two big groups. And I think the next generation often also has that complex where they think, well, I'm not really sure if I'm qualified or if I have what it takes. Or, and I think especially this generation as well, sometimes has the feeling of, you know, especially with social media and everything, they look out there and everybody else is wonderful and great. And everybody's going on the best vacation and they have the best cafe and everything's amazing and their life is terrible. That's how they feel compared to all these images that they're being pushed on online.
Yes.
And they think like, man, I can't even make a coffee look good. So how am I going to go make disciples? Like, that's not going to happen. I can't go to another place or cross a border or boundary. So I think for the next generation, what we, like, we really want them to know is like, you're not the future of the church, but God's using you right now.
Yeah.
And actually, like, as from other generations looking at the next generation, we see, and I think we all see it, we're like, oh no, you guys are so uniquely positioned to reach this generation and many generations. Like the very fact that you are fluent in social media and different things like that, it gives you a leg up on so many different people. So I think it's like, how can people leverage their passion, perspective, purpose, in a way just to say, God, you know, use me, whatever I am, whatever I have. And so we just want them to know, like, hey, they don't have to wait to be a part of what God's doing, but he's already a part of the story that's in their life. And then the second generation, it's just a big term for, you know, could be like, let's say, ethnic Korean, like their parents immigrated to France and now they're growing up in Paris, but they speak French and went to French schools. Like, that'd be an example. And so, like Janice said, you know, they've lived between cultures their whole life. They may have come up from a different, their family came from somewhere else, but they usually know how to switch languages. They know how to switch cultures.
Yeah.
They don't have multiple personalities, but sometimes it feels that way. And and we always want to say, like, hey, that's not just your background. Because a lot of people think of it like, oh, that's my background. I don't really know. They don't assign any meaning to it. But
yeah,
we would see a preparation in that. It's like, no, everything in our story matters. Like, just like our fingerprint's different, everybody's fingerprint's different. Everybody's story matters and it's different. Because I think a lot of second gen people are often told you belong, which is good. I think we can even fire them even further to say, like, hey, you don't just belong, but like you're like wired to cross boundaries, whether that's a geographical boundary or just like a cultural boundary within your own city or school. It's like, if you were going to engineer a person, which maybe we're coming to that someday, but like if you're going to engineer a person to be a missionary, you know, that's the person that you would make.
Right.
I think God did that.
Yeah. As opposed to me growing up in the Midwest of America with zero diversity around me, you know, I had to go to seminary and take cross-cultural classes and try to learn how to cross cultures. And we're surrounded by so many young people in Europe. Like you said, that's been their whole life and multiple cultures, right? Yeah. So
I just want to be, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to be clear here. So the answer is not middle-aged white Americans from small towns. Is that what we're saying?
We're not being clear about that. The solution. Darn it.
Because that's what I was betting on.
We're special too.
We've been here for 20 years. I was kind of hoping.
I mean, there are like different kind of specialties from that too. I mean, a lot of this group, I would say they are very pioneering. They're like catalysts for many things. I mean,
yeah,
good for different things. That I would say is also very much necessary, needed. But I think seeing the uniqueness, not just saying, you know, count anybody out.
I'm thankful that you as an East Asian said that, not me, you know, because that would have felt like patting myself on back.
Right. We appreciate the perspective. But I think it's just the key, just to highlight the key point here is that there is a unique, I would say like a kingdom point of leverage with that, both that generation and like you said, the second gen folks who are, I mean, they're born into a cross-cultural environment. They're growing up in that. They, like you said, seeing it in our own kids, that they adapt quickly to relationships. They step into those things quickly. They are adaptable across multiple contexts. Many of them have, they're already carrying multiple languages basically from birth. It's just it's an incredible gifting. Like you said, Janice, it's an incredible gift that the Lord has given to them. I think oftentimes in the culture they're growing up in, sometimes they feel like their background can be an obstacle or a weight that they're carrying, that they're trying to unload so that they can just be accepted as normal. But I think what a great perspective you guys bring into their lives to be able to say, no, this is a gift. This isn't a burden. This is a gift the Lord has given you to go, like you said, almost with far fewer hindrances than people like us would have to be able to cross cultures, to be engaged, new people with the gospel. It's an amazing opportunity.
And like also see, you know, I would say majority culture people playing into this as well. So, you know, you mentioned Frankfurt. So we had people from different places there, but just Frankfurt itself is a very diverse city. We're something like 54 to 57% non-German background. So it's just already very diverse. And I think over 180 nations were represented here. But if you grow up here as a German, or, you know, if you grow up in Paris as and you're French, ethnically French or whatever, you're going to school in a very multicultural setting too. So like you're not growing up like maybe somebody in the countryside. So you have they have a leg up as well. Like they kind of grow up just being able to navigate those things, and just seeing, you know, our kids come home from school and who they walk with and how different they are from them. What we don't want to say is, oh, hey, if you're not next gen, or if you're not second gen, like you don't count. Or that's definitely not what we want to say. I realize in Europe, there are a lot of places that are not multicultural. There are places that are monocultural, and that's totally great. But I think even people from multicultural places going to some of those monocultural places can be a blessing, because not only can they be like a chameleon there in some ways. And, you know, like we know Americans, we learn about like American, you said Midwest, you know, like people like us, like I mean, we have to learn contextualization, and they just kind of do it without thinking about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And, and I also think they bring perspective to those people in a monocultural place as well, in a healthy way.
For sure. So in that, talking about the giftedness of those people and what they're doing, like we said, they can almost cross any border, right? They're almost born into that, have that gifting from God to be able to walk into new cultures, new relationships, even maybe new places. So connected to that, you guys have rolled out an initiative, kind of an organization that's called Disciples Without Borders. So this is in a lot of ways, the organizational manifestation of this vision to be able to send, right? To be able to send Europeans to other places. Talk a little bit more about the shape that has taken, even maybe starting with the name Disciples Without Borders, and just walk us through that process.
I think the idea of Disciples Without Borders really just comes from Acts 1:8 of that Jesus said, you're my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. And just these kind of expanding circles of places, in that, you know, we like to say, like borders are for passports and countries. They're not for disciples. It's not that they don't matter, but like one thing that we've realized is like, no matter when we've shared God's story with someone, no one's ever asked like if we have like, if, I mean, in the places that we serve, I know it's different some places, but nobody's ever said, hey, can I see your ID first? So like whether you can share that or not, you know? So like most people don't really, I mean, they might be interested in where you're from, but not because it's a barrier. It's if anything, it's a bridge builder. So yeah, we just want people to see that like people are already connected to people all over the place. So that's kind of where that came from. I think it just communicates the vision without having to say a whole lot.
Good. So what kind of shape has that taken? You know, you talked about a church planting pathway in Frankfurt, where there was kind of a pathway for disciple making, missional living, wherever you are. There was one for, hey, we want to move into like church planting. What kind of shape has this taken? I know it's fairly new, but what's the manifestation that this has taken so far?
Kind of at the very beginning, one of the things we saw was that we did see some individuals excited about missions or interested. And they would usually raise their hand, and this is, you know, thinking in Central Europe, we'd see people raise their hand and say, I think God's like moving me to do something. And over and over and over, as we interviewed people and heard people's stories and even missionaries who had gone on, we're like, yeah, and how did people respond when you did that? And they said, well, not very positively. Usually they were like, are you sure you need to go to XYZ country or this city to do that? Like, can't you do that here? And they were like, well, yeah, I am doing that here. And I want to do that. I feel like God's leading me to do it somewhere else, or I have this opportunity to do it somewhere else through studying or working or just, you know, raising support. You know, and they were like, okay. And so they would send them to a, you know, mission organization somewhere and say like, yeah, I guess talk to them. And then they would go talk to them. And then the mission organization would say like, oh, has your church verified you? And they're like, I don't know if they really support me or not. And they're like, well, bring them this paper. It's really important that they sign off. And they said, well, we brought them the paper. And then they checked the box and said, yeah, they're okay. Then we went back and we're like, yeah, we're going to do this. And they're like, well, you need to raise, you know, you raise $100,000. And then you can go. And they're like, whoa, how am I going to do that? And they're like, well, go back to your church. Maybe they'll support you. And then they go back to their church. And the church is like, it's kind of difficult right now. We love you and we know you got this thing, but we can't. And I would say at the most, what we heard was like, sometimes people could go to individuals. They were like, well, you can go to some individuals, but we've got some projects going on right now. So please be careful. But for most people, and I say this with a wink in my eye, like if they were lucky, they would pray for them. And, but the norm was that they just forgot about them. And if they went away for 1 year and they came back, they were like, oh, you're back. Where were you? And if they were gone longer, they just never heard from them again. I realize as missionaries, you can report back and things like that. But if no one wants to hear what you have to say, sometimes you lose the motivation to be able to share that back at some point as well. So that's like, I would say an experience of very many people. I actually talked to a couple mission organization leaders as well, and they were like describing the same thing. And so we're like, how can we help people to be sent, but how can we help churches to send people well as well? So I think that was part of the thing. So we're like, hey, let's talk to some leaders in our city first, because we're big believers in like, hey, if you're not doing it, don't export it somewhere else. So yeah. Like, let's talk to some leaders in our city and say, hey, we're going to do a mission 101, and it's really low bar. Like, this is what missions is. We're going to hear from people, from some Europeans who've actually been missionaries. And we'd like you as the leader of the church to invite the people. So they did, whether they came or not, they were kind of in charge of like, oh, I think this person would be good. So that kind of helped us to get them on board. And we did the mission 101 thing. And I think we realized right away, while there is interest, especially from young people, also from, you know, people from different backgrounds. And, you know, people are already asking like, hey, when are we going to do this again? You know, and we were saying, well, the stories are good, but we want to move beyond like hearing stories. So moving beyond, it was called Mission 101. And we said, hey, there's going to be a practical part of this. And that's going to be a short-term trip. But we didn't call it a short-term trip. We called it a short-term learning experience, because we really wanted people, we kind of had a head, heart, hands model. Like, hey, we want you to learn something when you continue this learning that you've been doing. We want your heart to be changed, and we want you to be able to put your hands to something and actually be used in a meaningful way. One of the examples of that was taking a multicultural group of people from a little network, held church network, to Athens to partner with the church that already, there was already maybe from Frankfurt, there had been a financial partnership from one church to another, but there'd never been more than that. And really just to first learn and listen and see what they were doing. Yeah, so that would be one example of how that's happened. There's actually been multiple trips to that place since then, and there are more on the calendar. And through the conference, some of them were able, that we've mentioned earlier, some of them were able to actually come here. And while maybe it wasn't like specifically a mission trip, but it was a relational builder, because that's also something new for them. Like they're used to receiving people, but they've never really sent people. So even getting people outside of their city to another city, some of whom had never been outside of Greece, they, you know, just coming here opened their eyes to, wow, there are different people here. We heard some more stories. So in some ways that was their mission 101, was coming here and getting exposed and just already casting vision. And so even with that example, after the conference, we got together and we're talking, he came over to our apartment, and it went from a partnership where we were really pouring in one direction to them saying like, hey, we have somebody we think that has a heart for missions, and we would love to see them come partner with you guys. We think they could learn where you guys are, but also we think they could be an asset. And it just so happens, like, also a young second generation person from Greece. So that was just a really cool connection, and I'm gonna land that first plane there, and you know, there's more. But
no, that's great.
But that's a really neat thing to point out. I mean, you're taking Europeans on mission trips. But that's never been a part of our missions career, really, is taking local partners on mission trips to other places. But it makes so much sense. I mean, that was a huge pivotal part of my calling, was going to another culture and experiencing that. So what a great opportunity for people to have their hearts stirred up and experience that calling from the Lord.
Yeah. And I think just with the, as you guys are pressing into this, the strength of this Disciples Without Borders initiative is, you know, it's not just, we've talked about it sometimes in some of the conversations we've had, there's been a framing of, oh, well, this is like a, it's like a mission sending agency from within Europe, right? To facilitate the sending out of Europeans. And it is that. I think it's beginning to move in that direction. But there's also a big part of just casting vision for missions, equipping for missions, training churches specifically for missions. So it is kind of a comprehensive effort to engage European churches with a vision for missions and for sending people out. And then you guys are creating pathways, facilitating these trips back and forth. I think it is a crucial step. We've talked about it a lot, and you mentioned it a while back, Kelly, just the one of the markers for exit that I think we look for, that we should be looking for, that we should be working towards, that I think is often neglected, is in the church planting process, if we don't get to the point where our churches are actively sending out workers, just as we have been sent out, then we have to ask the question, are we ready to exit yet? And so it was just gracious of the Lord to provide a space for you to be able to sit, think through that, the challenge that you got from that brother or sister that said, hey, where are you weak within the missionary task? And to focus in, zero in on exit. I mean, and that would be true for so many of us, right? Exit, I think, is in some ways, the hardest part, is that we poured our hearts and our lives into this place and these people, and then how do we exit well? I think missions history is littered with a lot of bad examples of exit. Mm-hmm. But as we look to the scriptures, we see, hey, we want to be the type of people that were like Paul, commending local leaders into the hands of the Lord and trusting them to the Lord, but then also seeing missionary workers sent out of those churches. I think that was a core reason why Paul was looking across there, the work he'd done in Romans 15, and said, there's now no longer any room left for me to work, is because not only have churches been planted, not only are they multiplying, but they're actually sending as well. So in many ways, what you guys have pressed into is kind of the capstone for a church planting work in Europe, and really in anywhere, would be to say, hey, these churches we planted, that we've come alongside, we're seeing them now step into the same realm, the same kind of family that we were sent out of, that same spirit that sent us out from our family of churches. This family of churches is now doing the same thing. It's incredible.
A very short note on that part.
Yeah, please.
Actually, with the heartache of exiting, but at the same time, it's so rewarding. I think that's a part I would like to also point it out. Because as we have different kind of sacrifices and send people out, some people, majority people, they do come back. And when they come back and you're hearing feedback from other people, other leaders, seeing how these people, because they've experienced seeing the world or other people, other cultures, they've been stressed, they've been challenged, but they have grown. And they take that mentality coming back to the local ministry and how they actually shine differently. If you want to have anything wonderful, is there's no pay. How do you say that in English? No pay, no gain.
No pain, no gain.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. So the paying part is the work part, but at the same time, it's so rewarding.
Yeah, that's right.
I would like to kind of point it's not all painful or, you know, not just, yes, but obedience. But obedience on the other side is a sweet fruit that we also get to enjoy. Local ministry get to enjoy as well.
Yeah, it's good.
So I have a question for you guys, because I still feel very new in Europe, and I'm still really amazed by the diversity in Europe. You know, we lived in India for many years, and we focused on Indians, period, right? <Yeah. laughs> We went to Indian church, we spoke Hindi, and our focus was Indian believers. And so when we moved to Spain, my assumption was I am here to focus on Spaniards, and we're going to go to Spanish church, and that there's so much need for that. The lostness of Spaniards is very, very high. However, I remember the first time we went out to share the gospel, I didn't talk to a single Spaniard. Like the people, every person I met was an immigrant. And that doesn't mean there aren't plenty of Spaniards, right? But that was an eye-opening experience for me. We went to a park and I only talked to people from all these other countries. It's a big discussion for our missionaries in Europe and for our organization. So I want to hear from you guys with 12 years in Frankfurt. Germans need to be targeted with the gospel, and half of your city are immigrants. So how do you guys think through that? Are you trying to reach everyone all at once? Do you have a different strategy for Germans and a different strategy for immigrants? How do you see that?
So from our first 3 years, that's more strictly German ethnic church. So not only it's very, very, very German. And I will almost say, if you're not that group, you will feel left out. But now I think about forward with the other church plants in our own second church plant. We wanted to plant neighborhood-focused church plant. All these people, again, back to second-gen and next-gen people, these people, they know the culture really well. They know the language super well. And it's quite amazing to see how these people actually, even my own children, and then giving this gospel back to ethnic Germans.
Yeah,
I believe it's like church plant. You need different kind of churches. So not one is better than others. It's like evangelism. Some people, they are so much for street evangelism. Some people only through relationship. But I think through different situations, I think as SMs, we should be good with both. But in different situations, navigate to see the goal or to see what God is giving us to be accomplished.
Yeah.
That's the wrong answer. It's only street evangelism.
Well, some places that is the strategy. Great. And go for it.
So, and the other thing would be, and that's, I think the first time that Jesse and I connected too was like through this kind of thinking was at a meeting where we talked about like, hey, what are social strata that go across multiple groups of people? Mm-hmm. And I think that just way of thinking and like, hey, how do we see our whole city as one? So like, you know, most of our friends and partners, like, and there are some that are thinking citywide, there are quite a few here actually, but most people are thinking about their neighborhood, their immediate area, and they've got their hand at the plow and they're working really hard, and like, God bless them. Like, if without those people, we wouldn't see any churches planted. So we're really thankful. But there are a few people that, like, God has either led or gifted or whatever, put in a position to be able to zoom out in, like, the 30,000 foot view of the city. And when we look there, it's like, if you just looked at all the 180 nations, not even including people groups, it would be like, there's no way. Like, there's, like, I don't even know where to start. Or I think what people did in the past was like, well, ethnic Germans are, okay, they're the largest single group. So we're going to we'll do that. And the assumption was that they're just going to reach everybody else. And some people will reach out, right? But I don't think we see patterns of that happening where it's like, oh no, they're like, now all of a sudden Afghans are being reached or something. Like, that's not the pattern. So it's like, we have to think a little bit broader than that. I don't have a great term for this, but I would just say our strategy specifically with our, I would say, some of our closest partners, and not just in our church, but like across the city, has been multicultural German speaking. And German speaking doesn't mean that, like, they necessarily have the best German in the world, but like they use German at least as a trade language. So, like, one example of like how that works is we use, like, German, like, Frankfurt has a high level of people who have German as a trade language because they need it to work and for visa. And Germany even offers, like, language classes to immigrants and stuff like that. So they're low intermediate level of German. And so we even try when we're, you know, doing things like a worship service or a meeting or whatever to make sure that we're speaking. And for me, it's easy to speak at that level. But even for our German partners, it's like, they try to think, it's okay, simple. If somebody who's at a low intermediate level, how could I share this in a way that they would hear that? But then, like, we've even had Iranians, which there are a lot of Iranian believers over the last years that have come to faith. And so we've even had Iranians who then were able to reach out to share to Afghans who speak Dari, which is, you know, very similar, if not, some people think it's the same, but that's disputed. But it's very similar. And so, like, even though it maybe it had been harder at times for me, if for whatever reason, or for a German to maybe reach an Afghan, but through somebody who has, let's say, B1 German, who's come from Iran, who's a part of a church network or something, where we've really targeted them, I would say, because they're open and they're like an influential group and they have connections to other people. Like, you can see, like, it's not all strategy though, either. I think you also have to be careful of like, okay, we're going to do this and this is going to happen and this is going to happen. Yeah. But at least you have to be able to see a natural line and somewhere. Yeah. And so it's going to be the way we look at it.
That's good, guys. I think, man, praise God for the vision to see more sending among European churches. I do want to emphasize your focus on next gen. And just to be clear, next gen would be kind of like 18 to 30-ish age range, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And then second gen. So folks that would be from some kind of immigrant background, maybe their folks immigrated and they were born here, but just the unique opportunity they have, the gift, like we've been saying, they've been given of growing up here, having that language facility and that adaptability, basically being born into missionary skill set.
Yeah.
And so that really stepping into that, I think in many ways you guys are following what the Spirit's doing in a pretty unique moment in European history. And just almost everywhere we look, you know, conversations you guys are having all around Europe, we're seeing those similar trends pop up. There's just openness among that generation. And then there's a unique workforce that the Lord has put here from those second gen, some of whom come from really strong believing backgrounds, some of whom coming to Christ and now asking the kinds of questions that you guys have mentioned of, hey, I want to go, what do I do? And what you all are after through Disciples Without Borders and other partners you're working with is helping Europeans to answer that question and helping European churches to answer that question, which I think is key for the next steps of gospel advancement throughout Europe. So
I would say one of the blessings has been that have been working with some amazing partners is what I want to say.
Yeah.
Who many of them are second gen people themselves, but they're middle aged. So they're not next gen. And they've had this experience from youth to now. And I think they've kind of caught the vision. And that's where I think I'm most excited is seeing how that they're carrying that vision really, you know, back in that same direction themselves. So in the end, like I started out saying, like, this is a story of partnership and not really a story about us.
I want to add, I want to close by just encouraging our listeners for those people in our lives that are either immigrant background or our own children, TCKs. What you said at the beginning, Janice, when you said they have this secret weapon, I loved that about your missions conference that I attended. It totally flipped this narrative that, you know, so many of our kids and immigrants, they hate the question, where are you from? They hate it, right? Because it's just this big mixed up answer. You know, my parents are from here, but I was born here and then we moved there and they're all mixed up and they can be embarrassed by it. But it is something that God can use, right? It's an amazing, amazing gift. And they have skills that many of us try to learn. So I just love that flipping that narrative. Mm-hmm. And I want us to be able to speak that to all kinds of people like that in our lives.
Yeah, that's right.
It is actually like narrative perspective. I think it's so easy as parents, as we wanted to, all the goodness our children can have, like all the fun that we had in the past, especially if you grow up in America, there are a lot of privileges, things that, you know, prom and all that. But if we truly believe God's design is the best, and we truly believe he has called us, our family, to be on mission, and then it's really also very important to point out actually the blessings among this journey, not that there's a time for us growing up in to receive certain kind of blessings, but these are actually God's children and God has chosen this journey for them. Instead of looking at, oh my goodness, my child, my older one has to repeat 1 year, to see something negative, or actually I can count the blessings within this 1 year she has experienced in American school, then have in Taiwanese school, and all that combined cultural competency or quotient that has raised that most kids won't be able to get in one kind of school setting.
We always have two ways to look at things. And even with our kids, like we feel our kids more than anyone else, like especially when they're hurting or when they're, you know, confused or whatever. And so like, it's very easy to jump into that space. But we have to be parents and not just friends. And a parent doesn't only feel for them, but they also give them perspective. And
perspective, I always say, is through God's lens, not even my own lens.
That's a great word. Yeah,
thanks
guys.
For adding that.
Yeah, that's right. And we see it, like Shani mentioned, we see it in your girls, man, just how the Lord is at work through them and using them alongside you guys as you minister as a family. Mm-hmm. So we praise God for that. Guys, thanks so much for the time. I know this is going to be a blessing to our folks to hear about what the Lord's doing in and through you and through European churches.